Welcome to Betrayal Recovery Radio, the official podcast of APSATS, the Association of Partners of Sex Addict Trauma Specialists, hosted by Dr. Jake Porter. APSATS is a nonprofit organization providing professional training and compassionate support to partners affected by problematic sexual behavior and betrayal trauma. In each episode, Dr. Jake guides a conversation of enlightening insights and practical tools to empower those affected by sex addiction and betrayal trauma to use their voices and live their values. The mission of Betrayal Recovery Radio is to offer hope to those in need of healing and growth to those moving through grief. And now, here's your host, Dr. Jake Porter.
Welcome to APSATS Betrayal Recovery Radio. I'm your host, Dr. Jake Porter, and I'm excited to be here with you again today. Hey, let me let you know about a few things coming up from APSATS, the Association of Partners of Sex Addict Trauma Specialists. The foundational training of APSATS, the Multidimensional Partner Trauma Model Training, is going to take place again online next month, just a few weeks from now, November 8th through 11th. And then the following month, on December 2nd, there will be a one-hour training from Marie Krebs called How and When to Refer to a Higher Level of Care. If you're a coach or a therapist out there wanting to learn to work better with those who've experienced betrayal, I want to strongly encourage you to check out these trainings, especially that multidimensional partner trauma model training if you've never done that. APSATS exists to advocate for partners and to provide education to those who are in the helping profession so that they can do better good and avoid treatment-induced trauma with those that are seeking to help. So check out those events at APSATS.org. That's APSATS.org. So let me ask you, what happens when a sex addict gets sober, but not much else changes? Well, I can tell you what happens. I can tell you that over time, it actually leads to more division in the relationship and can lead to more resentment in the relationship, because sobriety alone is not enough to repair the wounds of betrayal. Today, we have on Dr. Eddie Caparucci, and he's many things. He's a licensed professional counselor in both North Carolina and Georgia, and he's certified in treating problematic sexual behaviors. He's worked with professional athletes and TV personalities among his clients, and he's the creator of the Inner Child Model for Treating Problematic Sexual Behaviors, which is this unique approach that focuses on identifying unresolved childhood pain points and teaches individuals how to process emotional distress in more healthy ways. And he's the author of several books, including Going Deeper, How the Inner Child Impacts Your Sexual Addiction, Why Men Struggle to Love, Overcoming Relational Blind Spots, and Removing Your Shame Label, Breaking Free from Shame and Feeling God's Love. He's the administrator of two different sites, menagainstporn.com and sexuallypuremen.com. And he's the host of the monthly webinar, Getting to the Other Side. I'm really excited for you to hear this conversation with Eddie, where we talk about why men have to do more than merely get sober and how they can begin to lean into their relationship and actually overcome some of their relational blind spots. Sit back and enjoy this conversation with Dr. Eddie Caparucci. Dr. Eddie Caparucci, welcome to Betrayal Recovery Radio.
Oh, so good to be with you, Jake. I've been looking forward to this for quite some time. I know it's been difficult to get our schedules together, but I'm ready to rock and roll with you.
Yeah, here we are. I'm ready too, Eddie. That rhymed. I'm ready, Eddie. This is going to be a good episode. I've been excited about this topic. I'm a fan of your work, particularly your book on the inner children of sex addict. I've had several clients read that and get a lot out of it, but I know you've got a lot more going on as well. So we'll talk more about that toward the end. I want to launch right into this topic of why sobriety is not enough. And that's something you say often. What do you mean that being sexually sober is not enough?
Yeah. Well, you know, if we look at it again, we talk about what is the issue when it comes to problematic sexual behavior. Well, it's not really about sex. It's about intimacy. It's an intimacy disorder. Well, what I've come to understand, and I'm sure you've seen this in your practice also, a large majority of the men who I work with are what I refer to as emotionally undeveloped. And we'll talk more about that later. But basically, to answer your question, is that it's okay. We definitely want people to stop their destructive behaviors. There's no doubt right. about that. That has sure. to happen. This way, the partner feels safe, feels secure. However, just the fact that you stop the behaviors, if you're still not emotionally connecting, if you're still inwardly focused, if you still lack things like curiosity, the relationship overall is not going to improve, because those who have been betrayed are going to be looking at this and saying, I don't really see changes. You're telling me you're no longer doing X, Y, and Z, but you look like the same person. So why yeah. should I have this confidence? Why should I have this self? Why should I be reassured that right. you are going to be safe for me? So that's why I talk about right. the idea that being sober is not enough. We need a transformation of the heart with people.
Yeah, I've definitely seen couples in that very scenario. And I've even seen it to where, and I'm sure you have too, a man gets sexually sober and then relationally worse. Because the thing that was actually kind of tempering some of his emotional underdevelopment has now been taken away. And it's almost like he gets worse in some ways relationally.
In the substance abuse world, when we talk about alcohol and drugs, we refer to some of those people as dry drunks.
Right.
Okay. They're not drinking any longer, but yet because they don't have that outlet, they are more ornery. They're more withdrawn than even before. So therefore, again, all right, great. The behavior is not there, but there's nothing from a relationship standpoint that somebody can tap into and enjoy.
Wow. Yep, that's right. So this idea of emotional underdevelopment, how is it that a man becomes emotionally underdeveloped in the first place?
Yeah, if you go back to I'm going to take you back to your training and go back to childhood development.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
What goes on in those early stages of childhood development? Well, we are taught, or we should be taught at that point, how to learn to emotionally bond. Mm. And when a person is not giving the tools such as, you know, what does it mean to attune to someone? What does it mean to have empathy? What are the words I put with my emotions?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. I mean, that's so important. So therefore, you get let's say you have a 3-year-old, 4-year-old, his 7-year-old brother's going to a birthday party, and the kid's having a meltdown. And the mother comes and says, so what, you know, stop it. You need to stop. You're like, want to go. I know you want to go, but you can't. Just stop it. That doesn't help that child to understand what they're going through and feeling. Versus, look, I know you're upset. What you're feeling is called disappointment.
Mm.
And then we talk to them about disappointment. It may not all register at that moment, but you're planting the seed. We don't get that seed planted. For example, the idea about trust. You know, were you able to wander away and then look back and say, oh, there, mom and dad are still there. I feel safe. Or, no, they're not. So, therefore, I need to learn how to cling to somebody. Or I learned that, you know what? Can't trust people. I don't need people. So, there's all these various stages of development that are missed. And when those are missed, then a child is left on their own to try to figure out, what do I do with these feelings I have, because they still have the feelings.
Sure.
When different things happen in my life that I don't understand. And oh, the one other important area, which I think is really critical for our recovery, And that is, does someone teach you how to sit with emotional discomfort? Because if they don't
stress
teach you how
tolerance.
To sit,
yeah.
Stress tolerance. Because if they don't do that, then what's a kid to do? Kid's not gonna just sit here with this. He had to come up with, or she had to come up with a solution. And they come up with an amazing solution for a child based on the fact that they don't have a lot of worldly experiences and that they are more emotionally based in their thinking than cognitive. I won't think about it. I won't think about it. So how do they not think about it? They distract themselves. Too much TV, too much food, too much maybe fantasy in their own head. We then take that coping mechanism, right? And what do? We bring it into our teen world, our adult world. All we do is we change the behavior. And over time, if you keep going there, and now we start playing with the neurochemicals in the brain, we have perhaps the building of an addiction. So that's what we talk about. What happens? Why are we emotionally undeveloped? We're not given the guidance, the nurturing, the direction that we need to learn how to bond. You talk a lot about attachment work, which is so needed in this field. Isn't it incredible that this is not so just black and white? That, I have this sex addiction or I have this porn addiction. Let's just take care of that.
If only. Yeah, it's not like that. Yeah, I was thinking about the attachment stuff as you were explaining it and how, you know, really it's I had a betrayed partner give me this diamond because I always talk about different facets, you know, and I think we're just talking about different facets of the same phenomenon. And I want to reflect something that you said because I think it's really important, something I observed in your answer. And you talked about the child basically learning these things, right? From their caregivers. But I heard you talk about two different ways of learning it. One was direct, hey, what you're feeling is called disappointment, but also just it being modeled and
indirect
and expressed with them, right? Yeah, so this more indirect way and how essential both of those are. And, you know, I just want to invite listeners right now to pause and think about their own childhoods and what they receive from caregivers. And, you know, it's not all good, not all bad. No one's all good or all bad. But just to think about what was directly taught to you about emotions, what was modeled for you. Think about your partner and their parents and what you know of their family of origin. Because that's what Eddie is pointing us toward right now, right? Those early dynamics that become patterns that then get ingrained within us. It's really, really great.
Yeah, we bring all of this stuff into a relationship.
Okay? For sure.
You have your baggage. I have my baggage. We come in together. And what if we don't know what's in those bags? What are we doing? We are triggering each other many times. We trigger one another. And that does not help when we're trying to get people to reconcile from the pain that has been caused from betrayal.
Absolutely. Yeah, I often tell people that common triggering of one another, that's just a human problem. That's every couple is going to have some manifestation of that. But you layer betrayal on top of that. And now we're talking about a complex compound wound that is going to take a lot of intention.
It's like a keg of dynamite.
That's right. Right. Yeah.
And how often do we see the explosions happen?
Yes. Yeah. So let's go a little deeper into this and try to maybe get into a little higher resolution of this phenomenon you're talking about. What happens in relationships specifically where men learn to manage, they're just managing the sex addiction, but they remain emotionally undeveloped. What are some signs that listeners could go, oh, maybe that's us right now.
Yeah, what you're going to see is the inability to come back and actually to heal. That's going to be number one. That's going to be what we find in men who at this point in time are probably more engulfed still in their shame than they are in building a sense of renewed confidence. But what are we talking about? We're talking about transformation. Okay, and with that transformation, and I just wrote an article that just went on my blog. It's about, you know, what does the betrayed about need. And they need to see that you are more confident in yourself, that I'm doing my recovery, I'm doing all that work I need to do. Two, I am focused on honoring you and our marriage moving forward in our relationship. And when they don't see that, instead they see the guy who still looks like a limp wash rag, you know, it makes them fearful that are there really changes here or are there not? So I think that's another aspect that what are you seeing? You see the guy who just wilts when she gets or he gets upset about something because they're being triggered? Or can you be there and to be, no, I'm here for you and do the validation that's needed. Don't try to fix the problem. Don't try to make any, you know, don't try to, you know, shut it down just to be there in general. And a lot of times what you're going to see is a guy's going to try to shut something down or they're going to try to withdraw.
And you said the S word. You said shame. And I want to, this is going to be a little deviation from our planned outline of the conversation, but I want to go there. Let's go there because it's so important. And I know some of your ideas around shame. I've read them, and so I want to talk about this with you. Shame in particular is the result of emotional underdevelopment, right?
Yeah.
Not all shame, but
no,
to be stuck
all,
in shame.
Yeah.
To be unable to come up out of it.
That's
right.
Yes.
And can you just talk a little bit about how you understand shame? What is it? Where does it come from? And why do some people get stuck there specifically?
Right. Well, again, you know, we go back to the typical definition. I've done something wrong. Okay. That's my guilt. I am wrong. That's shame. I did something bad. Okay. That's my guilt. I am bad. That is my shame. People get stuck in shame. And again, I go back to the being emotionally undeveloped because, again, nobody walks them through, ooh, the pain point I have that I did something wrong.
Mm.
And therefore to say,
right.
You know what, honey? Yeah, you're right. That's something you shouldn't have done. But we all make mistakes. We all get something wrong from time to time. That does not make you a bad person. We're not giving that. So again, a child has to figure it out on their own. Now add on to that, Jake, the idea of maybe a parent who is kind of reinforcing the idea that you're bad, you're wrong.
Right. So not just not repairing the shame a child feels when they make a mistake, but actually sort of almost proactively reinforcing it and sending that message themselves.
Correct. So now we go, why do they get stuck? You look at those people who deal with shame, and what I do with a lot of my clients is I will give them that list of negative narratives. And I'll say, go through, highlight. Tell me which one, ouch, they hurt. And my gosh, there's a lot of yellow that's on those pages.
Can you give some examples of some of those negative narratives?
Yeah, for example, like I don't belong. I'm not good enough.
Right.
I don't measure up.
Right.
I'm stupid. Mm-hmm. You know, things like that. That's what we're talking about. And there are hundreds negative narratives.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And so now you're looking at this and you're saying these are some of the core beliefs that that person has about themselves. So now let's layer on top a spouse who's been betrayed, who's going through trauma, who is now telling you how horrible you are as a person.
Right.
Oh, it's almost like I'm back at home again, getting that reinforcement that I got from my parents.
Yeah.
So that's why we need to be able to communicate to those who've been betrayed that, look, you know what? You have a very difficult job because you have to push away those negative thoughts and narratives about yourself, and you have to look at yourself in a true light. And not the way I get people to look at it is, how does God see you?
Mm.
I mean, that's where I want them to go. So God sees you as broken.
Yeah. So so that the end goal would be I can hear my spouse's pain, the pain I've caused. I can hear her share her experience of me when I was doing those bad things. But because I don't let that continue to define me, I can actually be present with her in it.
Exactly. And that becomes one of the biggest issues that you, I'm sure you hear too, from those who've been betrayed. He or she, they're not with me.
Right.
It's like they're not there. They sit there, they say nothing, or they do say something when they're trying to explain or defend themselves with things.
That's right.
So we need to be able to, again, build up their self-worth, their self-confidence, so that they can be that person to support.
And I just want to say for listeners who might be hearing this and going, maybe skeptical of some of what Eddie's saying, this is all backed up by developmental neuroscience. And, that ability to, here's the clinical, jargony sort of lingo for it, upregulate out of shame, right? To bring myself up out of that state of shame, because shame is more than just thoughts. It's a whole body state. Is something that has to be built into us from the outside when we're children. Mm-hmm. And well, so,
We're parenting.
Exactly. We have to have support from professionals and people in our groups and, right, others who then teach us how to do it for ourselves and bring ourselves up out of that state of that slump of shame, mm-hmm. because it's a capacity issue, not merely a choice, right? It's an ability. Choice is certainly involved. I never let people off the hook. But this is more than just he chooses to stay in his shame. Mm-hmm. Would you agree?
Oh, absolutely. Again, this becomes something I need to learn how to do.
Yeah.
Just like those who are betrayed have to learn how do they take that trauma, okay, and where especially if it's complex, and it's stuck, and to be able to shift it over into the part of the brain where it's like, oh, I can now self-regulate myself. Right. And so it becomes all a process of teaching them. And again, what we talk about, we're talking about regulation. We're talking about how to regulate our moods and emotions.
Right, right.
But so emotionally undeveloped man cannot regulate their mood.
Right. They have to build the capacity to do it. It's more
correct.
Than even seeing that they need to do it. They have to be walked through how to do it. And that's why so often, and I'm sure you have your own versions of doing this with guys. I literally break it down to the point of like where I'm saying, sit up, look up, open your eyes, lean forward, right? Like move your body, because that is part of what's necessary to shift out of that that state.
Right.
Yeah.
But see, what you're doing, you're doing what you said before, the model. Because I don't know about you, but I'm just blown away by, the inner child model that I created is something that I work with all my men. And the one thing every sit we look at, okay, so how was your childhood? And I get, oh, it was good. It was fine.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Okay. Oh, yeah. And then, of course, you start to dig in deeper because you know what? They look at it, the way they're measuring, is it good or is it bad, by abuse. Abuse.
Right.
And oh, there was no abuse. And dad coached my baseball team. And mom cooked wonderful dinners. It was like, okay, but did anybody ever just kind of sit and talk to you about feelings and your emotions? Help you learn about this thing? No. In fact, we don't talk about emotions in our house.
Yeah.
So that's why, again, it is a learning experience for them.
Right. And I just always feel the need to say this when we have this conversation. It's not like we're blaming our parents because guess what? They had parents. Who had parents? Right.
You know, this is.
That's right.
And are you finally going to be the one to break that that cycle? Are
That's
you gonna
right.
Do it or not?
No. That's right. Okay. We really zeroed in on shame, but expanding that a little bit, how does being emotionally underdeveloped hinder a man's ability to help his spouse heal from betrayal trauma? maybe beyond just being kind of stuck in the shame?
Yeah. Well, first and foremost is empathy. Okay. I can't be empathetic.
Absolutely.
I don't even know what empathy is. You know, you want me to feel what you're feeling. Well, guess what? I don't even know what most emotions are. I can't even name them. How many times do you put the feeling wheel from somebody and they're like, oh my gosh, what is, I don't even know what happy means.
That's why I give them just 10. I start them out with 10 basic emotions. Like every emotion can fit into these 10.
Maybe I need to take him, scale mine back.
I'll send you my chart.
Yeah, please do. But empathy, and that is something that is desperately needed by those who've been betrayed. They need to feel the empathy coming, and they just can't deliver it. And that becomes a major problem in what we're trying to do. So,
and I want to break this down a little bit more just for our listeners, because I think what you're saying is so spot on and so important. I can't show empathy to you if I'm not aware of and in touch with my own emotion, right? Because if empathy means I'm feeling with you. That's what empathy means, to feel with. Right. I have to be able to be aware of and knowledgeable of my feelings so that I can feel them with you. Yeah, it's a necessary step on the way to empathy, knowing my own emotion. Yeah.
How many times you hear, you know, a wife will say, he never cries. He haven't shed a single tear. And, you know, you talk to him, he goes, there's none there. They're not there. It's not that I don't. Yes, I feel bad that she's feeling that way. But I don't have it to give. That shows how much they have cut off those emotions at such a young age because they were overpowering for them. They were painful because nobody was feeding into them. So therefore, it's like, you know what? I don't need it. I don't need to feel. It just causes more problems for me.
Yeah. And you've got my brain going like 90 miles an hour. One of my soapboxes, and I will try not to mount it for too long right now, but in all the research literature on empathy, they did something a few years back and they split empathy into two categories where they talk about cognitive empathy and then they talk about emotional or affective empathy. Mm-hmm. And I am so mad that they did that. Because what you're describing, I think, is that someone can have cognitive empathy. Oh, I do understand what she's feeling, right?
I know she's hurting.
I know she's hurting. I'm aware that she's hurting. Mm-hmm. And I may even like not like that she's hurting, you know, feel some, right?
Most likely.
But the affective or emotional, the attunement piece is missing. And in my experience, and I've worked with hundreds of couples at this point, I've never seen cognitive empathy work in terms of repairing a relational rupture.
It can't, because again, all right, great, you think it, you know it, but again, what are we trying to do? We're trying to build an emotional relationship, which wasn't really there to begin with anyway, because of whatever attachment style. No, but they didn't fully connect. He couldn't fully connect. Somebody had a wall up, okay? And so therefore, that's what we want. So if I'm just going to give you my knowledge or my, you know, cognitive aspect of it, and I'm not going to give you the emotional, guess what? We're still here. We're not here.
Right. That's right. And then the other place you shot my brain off to is that we also know some people, and this is a biotemperamental thing, I think it's genetic, some people may feel things more intensely than others. And I've been surprised when, you know, there's been this betrayed partner with these big emotions, and then the one who did the betraying, her husband, comes back and has a little bit of emotion. I think that's never going to get through because it's not matching. But here's the deal. She knows her husband and she knows that little bit of emotion is a ton of emotion for him.
You know, it's interesting when you say that. What I tell a spouse in many cases is, look, okay, your spouse is on this end of the spectrum when it comes to you, that emotional development. And you would love for them to come over to that end of the spectrum. I'm going to get them here. Okay, that's where I'm going to get them. But wow, it's going to look like night and day.
Yeah,
And
for
hopefully,
sure.
then he'll continue moving or she'll continue moving a little bit at a time on their own.
Right.
But they're not going all the way over here.
Yeah, and
That
certainly not
that's too
overnight.
much, right?
Yeah, right. And it's okay for people to have different levels of emotional sensitivity too. You know, it doesn't have to be matched perfectly as long as it's genuine and sincere and there's
Yes.
real authentic attunement there.
Amen.
Right. Yeah. Okay, that's good stuff. All right. So you talk about 14 blind spots. I'm very excited for this portion of the conversation because I feel like I'm gonna learn some things. So, what is a blind spot? I mean, I know what a blind spot is, but what are you talking about here with these 14
Yeah.
blind spots?
What I'm discussing when we talk about blind spots are they a blind spot is something that impedes my ability to emotionally bond and connect with someone else. So therefore, I am limited in what I can do from an emotional standpoint. And what I did, as I said, if I went and I identified through my work with men over the years, because I work exclusively with men, and I know women have their own blind spot too. I just haven't done that research on it. My guess is they would be very similar in that
Sure.
fashion.
Sure.
But basically, what I've come up with 14 different blind spots. And for example, the being inwardly focused is a blind spot. Okay,
Okay.
this is a person who they have a very difficult time looking outward to see what are the wants and needs of other people. And how did they become so inwardly focused? Well, at some point, again, their young brains develop this thought or this rationale that there's nobody there for me. There's nobody who's really going to be, I can be dependent upon to help me. So you know what? And what I'm going to do instead is I'm just going to look out for myself. And that's what they do. And they become inward. And that becomes, it comes across as very selfish. So this is the guy who will forget about his wife's birthday or anniversary, or even if he does, he doesn't like give gifts or a card or anything, just mentions happy birthday to you in that way. This is the guy who will, you know, stop on the way home to pick himself up something to eat and not think about bringing something back for his wife. Not being malicious, not doing it on
Sure.
purpose. It's just that's the way
Yeah.
he is in that sense. So that's one. Another one, which I think is that what I talked to you about before, with the inability to sit with emotional pain. And the fact that they can't sit with that emotional pain, what does that wind up doing? That winds up leading them to wind up engaging in activities to distract themselves. And many of those become addictive, and many of them are just destructive in nature. The lack of curiosity is a major blind spot. Now, that doesn't mean a person's not curious in politics, sport, gardening,
Sure.
food, but when it comes to
Yeah.
people, you know, the wife, you know, guy comes home and the wife says, "Oh, it was horrible with the kid today. Oh man, I'm sorry about that. Man, my day was just brutal too," and goes and walks off. Yeah, I have a story. One of my clients told me he was in his kitchen. His wife was out at a Bible study. He was in his kitchen. He just got himself a bowl of ice cream. She walks in. She has all these books. It was the first week of their Bible study. She has all their books. She has her syllabus. And he looks at her and goes, "So how was your study?" And she goes, "Oh, really good." She goes, "I have the whole curriculum." at everything. You want to see what we're going to be doing? And he looks down at his ice cream. He looks at her. Nah. And he walks away.
Oh, no.
Now, you can only imagine, Jake, right, how that played out in that house that day. I mean, not too well, right?
Yeah.
If you look at that. So anyway, blind spot. So therefore, they don't make that effort to really show a major interest in their spouse and what goes on with them. So again, like I said, there's 14 of them overall, and they just cover different things that we are involved in. For now, I'll just run through a list real fast. Hide and lie is a blind spot. I learned at a very young age that, you know what, it's better for me to lie because the punishment is just as severe as if I tell the truth. Or it's better for me to hide and like fade into the background.
Yes.
Because if I'm exposed, I'm probably going to be exposed to a lot of negative narrative, a lot of negativity, right, criticism, things like that. Lack of mindfulness is a blind spot. I don't even have to go into what that's about.
Yeah.
Impulsive, compulsive behaviors. The lack of interest and passions. Many of these people who struggle with addiction, they don't have a lot of interest and passion.
That's right.
Okay?
It's true.
They don't have that. So therefore, again, what does that do? That leads them to isolate more often along the way. Their inability to emotionally connect with one another. Let's see, what else do we have? Being hypersensitive to rejection or criticism. See that a great deal. Lack of contentment. Is that all there is? This is life. Lead to a lot of depression in people.
Yeah.
And then the one that I think is like the mother of all blind spots is the fearful blind spot. And I think if you look at the 14, you're going to find fear is involved in all of them. But fear is something that really keeps us from stepping out and taking that chance.
Yes.
You know what? That dirty word, vulnerability.
Yeah.
I can't be vulnerable. It's not going to go well if I'm vulnerable.
Yeah.
Past performances have told me that. So I'm not going to do it. And again, it's all about fear. Why do I stay inwardly focused? Because of fear. Why do I lack curiosity? Because of fear. Why do I hide and lie? You know, why do I lack contentment? Because I won't take chances and risks. So that is, like, to me, one of the core ones that we have. So we go through those blind spots and people identify them. Most people, they, you know, recognize or they correlate or resonate with probably about, you know, anywhere from 8 to 10 of the 14. And then what we do, we sit and we'll go through them, try to understand where was the origin for each of those, how they are crippling right now in our lives. And then, okay, what are the steps that are taken to be able to adjust to those?
You know, I as I'm sitting here thinking through that list you gave, which is a great list, you know, but I would have never thought of labeling those as blind spots, but I love it because of how you can play that metaphor out. You know, if I'm in my car, I've got a blind spot, right? And the only way for me to check my blind spot is to know it's there and with intention turn and look, right?
That's
like, otherwise I'm going to get in a wreck. There's going to be a collision, you know, and that I tell guys all the time, not just guys, actually, I tell all my clients, without intention, awareness, and then intention to do something different, we do not change in the direction we want to go.
That's right.
And so I love that, that metaphor of a blind spot. I see it's there. Now I can use intention to do something different.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. See, what you're talking about, you should talk about self-reflection. And again, the person who is emotionally undeveloped is not engaging in a lot of self-reflection.
Yeah.
They're not trying to look and see, first and foremost, one, they don't think they have a lot of problems or issues. and then two, if they do, they're not going to try to go there. Look, why? Because you get right back to shame.
Right.
You're just sitting here and you're stirring the pot for them.
Right.
So as you can see, when we go through all of this, there's a lot of different things that we need to address. We have to, one, help to build someone's self-worth about themselves. Two, understand what these blind spots basically are. They're coping strategies.
Sure.
They're all coping strategies that we developed at a very young age to be able to protect ourselves.
Right.
So now, right, let's look at these. How did they develop? Why did they develop? Okay, so it may have served you well back then. It's not serving you well any longer. So now I need you to develop the courage to be able to start to move away from them.
Yeah.
To start to develop new habits.
Yeah. So I can imagine a listener, particularly if it's a recovering sex addict, listening to this and going, okay, that sounds really great. How in the world do I get started? How, you know, it sounds great, but it sounds like a fairy tale, a fantasy, you know, too good to be true.
Mm-hmm.
What are just maybe one or two or three very first steps that someone can take to move themselves toward further emotional development?
Well, I think for first and foremost, number one is to admit the fact that I have a problem. I am.
Step one. Yeah.
Right. I struggle with emotional development. And if you struggle with the word, the term emotionally undeveloped, let me give you a different term. Emotional immaturity.
Yeah.
We're talking the same thing.
Right.
Okay. I'm emotionally immature. Now, people may say, wait, stop. I have this great job. All these
That's
people
right.
admire me for things.
Yes.
All this. Talking about emotional maturity.
Yeah.
We're not talking about maturity overall. You could be mature in many other facets of your life. Congratulations.
Right.
I'm glad. But we're talking about emotions.
And would you say, because I believe this is true, so I'd love to hear if you found this as well. I think people can be emotionally mature in some relational situations and not in others because of triggers, because of, you know, things from their childhood getting activated. And so a partner says, I've seen you be so empathic with your employees. Why can't you do that with me?
Yeah, exactly. Right? Because with those employees, still on a 10,000 foot level. Okay, we come down here, and this has got to be really raw. It's going to be more difficult for me. But you are absolutely right. Now, remember, when we talk about emotionally undeveloped, it's not like everybody is at the 100% mark. We're not.
Right.
There's different scales of it. And like I said, you could see people who, wow, you know what? You have a foundation, but you're still missing some core element that would really help to make your relationship so much more robust if we worked on those. So you can't look at it as, okay, yep, what? Everybody's got a blank canvas. Okay, we can't do it that way.
Right.
People have parts that are filled in. Now, there are a couple people who do have blank canvases. Okay.
But that's not the norm.
It's not the norm at all.
Right.
No, everybody has something that they're, that we can start to work on. So we look at that. So I know that I do have a problem.
Okay.
So therefore now I need to start to look at that. So then it's going back and identifying, okay, where does the problem lie? Because as you said, you know what? It could be different for different people. So we look at these blind spots. Which of these blind spots do you sit with and say, wow, yes, that resonates with me? More importantly, which of these blind spots did your partner look at and say, that's you, that's you, that's you. Okay. So we begin that process. And then it goes into the idea of, again, all right, how did this all begin? Where did it resonate from? Why did I put this coping mechanism in place? How did it help me in growing up? So could I have that? Because, again, I'm a big why guy. And I know when we're trained not to ask the why question. Okay? But I am the why guy because I believe if I understand why I think, feel, and do what I do, I am greatly empowered.
Absolutely. I agree.
Greatly empowered. So therefore it is. Why was that put it there? What was the purpose?
How did it serve me? Yeah. Yeah. It had a function. Well. It was adaptive at one time.
That's right.
But I have continued to use it to the point that it has become maladaptive now.
Correct. And now think about the other reason that question is so important. It's because it's going to be very difficult to move away from those things that have served me well, or I think served me well.
Right.
So therefore, if I have a more deeper understanding of what brought that on, I could sit there and say, wow, but you know what? That's not going on in my life any longer.
Yeah.
Those conditions are the same. I really encourage my clients all the time to ask themselves these questions, this question, how I feel versus what is real. And you're going to find that very often they're two very, very different things. And these emotions, these raw emotions, again, I believe are driven by our inner child and the unresolved pain point that child has. But yet, And think about it, for anyone who deals with addictive behavior, they are driven by their emotions more so than their rational thinking. So therefore, it is about slow everything down.
Yes.
To be able to sit there, process those emotions, feel it, and then bring it over to what's reality, what's real. Yeah. And that's where you make your decision based on that.
That's so good. And I want to actually take us all the way back around to where we started. Just the topic overall of why sobriety is not enough. And as I'm reflecting on our 43 minutes together so far, you know, we started out talking about why sobriety is not enough for the relationship and for the healing of the relationship. But thinking about all the guys I worked with over the years, thinking about myself and my own recovery journey, it wouldn't have been enough for me. It wouldn't have been enough for these guys. Like, you deserve so much more than mere abstinence from sexual acting out. And so, yeah, it's about healing the relationship, but it's also because, you know, we all deserve to enjoy real connection and intimacy and meaningful, fulfilling, substantive, authentic relationships.
Yeah, and I'll go even further. We all deserve to live an abundant life. I can't live an abundant life if I am emotionally voiding.
Right.
I am missing out on a large part of what's going on in my world.
Yes.
It's like, you know what, it's only like you're using the left side of your body and not the right side of your body.
Yeah.
And for people, it becomes very difficult to understand that because, again, they haven't experienced it. But once they do and something awakens inside them and they feel the vibrance and this excitement. I had a client once who came in one day. It was the spring. And he walked in and he starts looking out my office window. He turned to me, he goes, you know, and I've been working for him back for like a year and a half. He's done great work. And he goes, don't the leaves just seem so much more vibrant this year? Oh.
I love that.
It was great. It was absolutely
That's
great.
So good.
And I said to him, I go, well, actually, they're not. But... But you're noticing it, you're observing
That's right.
it, And that, and you're more importantly, you're appreciating it.
That's beautiful. That is so good.
That's what we're looking at. So you're right. It's not just about the relationship. It's about us as individuals.
Yeah.
That we live that robust life, that we do appreciate more things in life. Mm. Go back to some blind spots. It is lack of contentment and limited interest and passions.
Yeah.
And that all falls into the fact I don't have much in the way of emotion to motivate me to do anything.
Mm. That is well said. That's a beautiful, I love that story of the guy noticing the leaves. Eddie, thank you so much. If people want to get a hold of you, they want to learn more about you and all you're doing, where do they find you? What do you have going on right now?
Yeah, I have a lot going on right now, Jake.
You do, I know.
they can find out more about the whole inner child process if they go to www.innerchild-sexaddiction.com. And there they'll find out a lot of information there. There'll be a link to the book. Going deeper, how the inner child impacts our sexual addiction. We're actually working on a book for women who deal with love and porn addiction. We do not call it sex addiction for women. We call it love addiction for them. They can find out more about this whole idea of why men struggle to love, which is the name of the book, Why Men Struggle to Love. Overcoming Relational Blind Spot, by going to www.strugglingmen.org. And if they want to reach out to me directly, they can call, reach me at edcappa@gmail.com. I have trained a network of clinicians who have my inner child model, who now utilize that. So if they're looking for that kind of work, I'll be more than happy to give them a referral or to answer any kind of question they have on this. I get back to everybody. I respond to everyone's emails or calls because I feel like that's part of what God gave me to do.
That's part of your reputation. And I want to thank you for that you really give of yourself and of your time. So I appreciate that so much. And I appreciate your work. And thank you for taking time to come on Betrayal Recovery Radio, Eddie, and share what you've learned and what God's given you. And it's been great to visit with you.
Well, thank you for the opportunity. I really enjoyed this. It was wonderful. We'll have to do it again sometime.
Absolutely. You take care.
Bye.
You've been listening to Betrayal Recovery Radio, the official podcast of APSATS. If you've received help or hope from this episode, I encourage you to share it with someone you know. If you've not yet done so, please subscribe to our podcast on your favorite listening platform. Thank you for joining us. I'm Dr. Jake Porter, and you can always email me directly at jake@appsats.org. I'd love to hear your ideas, questions, or comments about the show. Until next time, keep choosing to use your voice and live your values. It's good for you and for this world.